Hope you had a nice weekend. We got a busy show ahead. We're here until 10 o'clock. Then we got a couple more World Cup quarterfinals for you. At 10, it's Japan-Croatia this afternoon. At 2 o'clock, it's Brazil versus South Korea. In between all of that, we'll have In the Box for a couple of hours. Barring some, we haven't had any extra time, any overtime yet. Got to always account for the possibility of that. And then we'll have also the drive for you tonight between 4 and 6. And we got some Monday Night Football. Saints and Bucks, by their records, not a great matchup, but an important game because leader in the NFC South up for grabs in that game.
Interested on the soccer, Jer. It was South Korea, Australia. There was one other country. People referenced how much their program had improved based on coaching, but the other reference was made of establishing a domestic league, much like we've done here in Canada. Mm. So thought that was kind of an interesting little talk and, you know, a big reason why. I think we'll see a lot of growth in the Canadian League, not to mention hosting the World Cup of Soccer in 2026.
Speaking of soccer, how's your Monday going? A report from a highly reputable source suggests that Cristiano Ronaldo, who has been mulling over an offer to go play, essentially probably play out the rest of his career in Saudi Arabia, and said, I'm going to wait till after the World Cup's over and then I'm going to make my decision. Apparently, according to reports, he's made his decision that I'm going to do it. $200 million a year. It's a 2.5-year contract. I'll do the math for you. That's a cool $500 million that Cristiano Ronaldo has taken to go play soccer in Saudi Arabia starting in January. Of course, he is essentially a free agent because he and Manchester United parted ways just before the World Cup began, and so a domestic team in Saudi Arabia went to him with an offer that apparently he could not refuse.
No.
$500 million.
Also kind of cool. He's going to play on the LIV Tour, so they have a little mix of that. You understand why he was pulling the temper tantrum that he was, JR. Quite simply, where he's at in his career and coming off the bench. As an athlete, I'd do this all day long if I'm Ronaldo because, hey, he's not as good a player and playing the EPL, and you know there's that kind of money sitting with you. That's when you're going to hurt your reputation, unfortunately, the way he exited Manchester United. And I think this makes a whole lot of sense for him at the end of his career.
It is, if it's all about the money, which, again, it's easy for all of us to say, yeah, but it's Saudi Arabia. First of all, nobody's going to be paying any attention to you. And secondly, let's face it, that's a country that has a not very good reputation about certain aspects of things. So the old, as we have come to learn with Qatar, the old blood money phrase comes into effect. So there is that, but if you can put your head down on your pillow at night, you're going to have 500 million reasons perhaps in your bank account that will make you sleep easier.
After the World Cup of Soccer being hosted by Russia and now Qatar, and again, a number of Russian oligarchs having owned soccer teams in England for years. Yeah, as an athlete, to be quite honest with you, unless you're linked directly to. Yeah, I wouldn't if I'm Cristiano Ronaldo, would not be worrying about that whatsoever.
Yeah, I did start to watch the documentary about FIFA. It's on Netflix.
Yeah, I started it as well. I couldn't get going. And what was also kind of funny is that I started thinking about Ian and I were covering that when we were doing the drive. And I didn't even get to the episode where the one fellow was the American. And he actually had an apartment for his own cats in New York. His name was Chuck something.
Chuck Blazer.
Yeah, Chuck Blazer.
Oh, yeah.
It was just a character. Like, it was right out of a movie, JR. Yeah. I remember when the name, first of all, came up.
Doesn't even sound like a real person's name.
No, it sounds like the
Chuck Blazer.
It sounds like the fake Twitter account that the Sens guy started a couple of years ago. Whatever it is.
Maxwell.
Yeah. Oh, my God. The Sens are so hot right now. Has anybody seen them? But what was your thoughts on it other than you're not surprised?
You know what? It's pretty, because it's the middle of the World Cup, and in the middle of just watching everything on the weekend.
And the fact that they set up shop
as well.
And they set up shop in Switzerland, right?
Yes.
So you're in a very credible country.
Yes, yes. Also a country that you could hide a lot of money in.
Great.
Although
point
apparently it was all cash and it was all delivered in brown envelopes to get Sepp Blatter elected in the first place. Not that the guy he had taken over from, whose name I don't remember.
Was it Juan Antonio?
No, it's Hau Havelange, I believe, or something like that. Anyway, he started the entire thing and he was allegedly as dirty as it comes and then passed that along and then Sepp Blatter and anyway. We don't need to go down that road. The breaking news this morning is that apparently Cristiano Ronaldo has taken that offer to go play in Saudi Arabia. for $500 million. All right, 7:20. Let's turn our attention to the Sens. They're after a day off yesterday, back on the practice ice later on this morning, preparing for a visit by the LA Kings tomorrow night. Of course, they beat the Kings just over a week ago. Part of four wins in the last five for Ottawa. There is a glimmer of hope after a very, very shaky first 6 weeks of the season. I think people are feeling a little bit better, particularly after this weekend. We spent time in the first hour talking about the win on Saturday and the work of the power play and the penalty-killing shift that Hamonic and crew put in, and then Claude Giroux's slapshot breakaway goal to finish off the Sharks. So that was Saturday, but that had followed Friday night's tour de force by Brady Tkachuk in a visit to, of all places, MSG. Brady Tkachuk had himself a night in what eventually would be an overtime win. Let's take you through his night, starting with this in the second period.
Now feeds it ahead, Tim Stützle. We're going to get a little dust up at center here, Trouba, as Tkachuk and Trouba not agreeing with each other, and Tkachuk goes in and grabs him. Trouba has him by the neck. One right hand, two right hands from Brady Tkachuk. Trouba gets his right hand. He's throwing one. He lands one on the ear. They both throw one and just miss. Whoa, Tkachuk just misses with a big left. Tkachuk's lost his helmet now, and he is throwing them at Trouba.
Oh, my goodness. This is not good for the hands, though, Dean. Two captains going at it here. They wrestle each other to the ice. These are big men throwing absolute bombs.
All right. So that was like the old-time boxing matches, the ones that, if you're old enough to remember, the Muhammad Ali's and Joe Frazier. Not that it was like that, but like center ice at Madison Square Garden, the so-called most famous arena in the world, and you had the two captains going at it. So that was in the middle of the second period. Then in the third period, in the final minute, he tips in the game-tying goal. At long last, the Ottawa Senators actually score a goal after they pulled the goalie. Not into their own net, actually goes into the other team's net. That gets them to overtime, and then, of course, this.
Here's Panarin. In weaving, sends it across. Fox cuts in, loses the puck. Out to center. Brady Tkachuk, Panarin. Comes back to catch him. Tkachuk cuts in. Scores! Brady Tkachuk buries it. The overtime game winner as Ottawa comes back and takes this away from the Rangers.
Oh, my goodness. What a massive extra point this is for the Senators. And what a play this was by Brady Tkachuk.
There you go. There's Dean and Gord with the call from Friday night. Brady Kachuk's breakaway game winner in overtime, capping off a two-goal, one fight night. He added an assist, the so-called Gordie Howe hat trick. Here's DJ Smith, who took the time to think about it, slept on it, talking about his captain's work. This from Saturday afternoon.
It might be the best game I've seen anyone play since I've been here. Really, when you look at it, you know, a couple goals, you know, his offensive presence early in the first period, his tips, he could have scored another one off a face-off jump, the fight at center ice, just all the things that went with it. It's a guy that clearly is dragging guys into the fight every day. He's having his best year.
Oh, and by the way, that was his 300th NHL game and his 100th career goal as well. What a night. Would you make of all of that, Simmer?
Oh, he's just outstanding, Jer. And there is no doubt for any young athlete, but especially, I think, for American kids, and watch his dad play at MSG many a time, including, I believe, against Russia in the World Cup of Hockey 1996. I also think for Chris Drury, who loves Brady Tkachuk, BU alumni, you're just looking at this and saying, hey, this doesn't exist in the National Hockey League. And when you watch that play right there, I don't care if it's Panarin or Trouba or anybody else. Once Brady Tkachuk, with his strength right now that has gone next level, there's nothing you can do. But what impressed me, JR, first of all, his speed off the rush, but how quick the hands were on that goal. That was a hell of a play he made. So kind of willed your way to victory. And it has been fun to watch him evolve so quickly into the best power forward in the National Hockey League.
Yeah, the skating has definitely improved. He's never going to be the fastest skater in the world, but he was a really, I don't know what the right word is, sloppy skater, right? With his, like, he still falls down probably more than he should.
Yeah.
But his skating has definitely improved. I think the other aspect of his game that I think is better is his shot. He has actually scored probably, got 12 goals this year. I want to say at least three or four that have come not from the blue paint, but have actually come from shots off the rush, shots from out. Like, his shot has improved. And again, I'm not saying that it's the best shot in the National Hockey League, but he wasn't scoring at all from any distance before, and now he's starting to do that. So add that to everything else that he brings to the table. And I just thought that that Friday night, and I'm certainly not alone in that, just that was just everything that you could hope for in terms of an effort from your captain was there on display on Friday.
Well, he's just such a great leader in every facet. It appears to be so mature and so genuine. And as far as a shot off the rush, that's what his dad had. And, boy, he wired one off of the post on Saturday night as well. Now, a little more stationary. But, yeah, that's how you go next level when it comes to goal scoring in the National Hockey League. Not many guys going to score that many in the blue paint. You look at a guy like Johnny Tavares. But outside of that, JR, yeah, off the rush, the things that he's capable of doing makes hockey a little more fun. And also, I know Pooley's mentioned it, and when I went to the Islanders game a few weeks ago, sat down low. The other part for him, whether you think, which he is going pretty fast, but when you're that big and you're powering off the wing, that's a lot to handle, right? I mean, and that's the part.
Oh, Panarin didn't seem to want any piece of him.
Well,
and kind of like, I'm going to bounce off him anyway.
Yeah, and that I'll tell you, that was a lot of, and this is where it's magnified. When you watch Panarin last year in the playoffs, you really started to realize his lack of really wanting to get involved. Not to mention, he's not a very big guy, but that's a matchup right there. Brady Tkachuk just leaned back at Tad and was like, nope, not going to happen here. And like I said, and then the move inside was beautiful and just found a way to get a couple of really important points after a flat effort on Wednesday.
Brady Tkachuk's night on Friday at Madison Square Garden, 2 goals, 1 assist, 3 points, plus one, of course, the fight, played 19 minutes, 15 at even strength, 8 shots, 11 attempts, 4 hits, and he goes 8-6, 57% in the faceoff circle. You want to talk about filling the stat sheet, look at Brady Tkachuk's night, particularly on Friday night, and you'll see that. Now, for everybody that says, and this is interesting, right? Everybody that says that is, and all the players talked about it afterward. We'll get to Jake Sanderson's comments in just a second. Everybody talks about the fact of, you know, a fight like that can really lift a team, right? Mm-hmm. And he kind of stared down the bench afterwards, which was interesting to me. I thought the Sens were playing reasonably well. I didn't think that they were half asleep in that game. I thought they were good. So Trouba came off the bench, and by all accounts, it was Trouba that actually asked for the fight because he was trying to wake up his team. And if you think about what happened after the fight, the Rangers actually took it to the Sens for a while in the latter part of the second period and the early part of the third period. So if you're talking about in terms of, you know, what jump-started their team more, like, you know, which player fighting, I actually think it was the Rangers in the short term. But I think what it really did is it juiced Brady Tkachuk.
Yeah.
Because for the rest of the game, Brady Tkachuk was a man.
Yeah, I totally agree, JR. And I took it more as a smile, like, look what I ended up doing. I fought this guy. And as far as Trouba, that's the part, too. You're talking about two real big boys. And in the case of Trouba, don't worry about hurting your hands because he's making $8 million, JR, and he doesn't have a goal this year. And he is
his wife's a doctor, though.
Yeah, exactly. And that's why
good thing they don't live in Manitoba.
Well, exactly.
Anymore.
He had to move to New York. But hey, he's a big physical defensive defenseman, limited guy. So you're trying to make an impact. But I agree with you on the way that went. And as far as fights and being there, when you talk about that, I always think back to, I don't think it was round one. It was probably round two of a little Bob Probert, Ty Domi back in the day. Mm. And there is something so special because I had the chance to go out with Ty Domi after game, Jared. But when you're a tough guy in New York, and not that Trouba is, I say this more in reference to Brady Tkachuk and fighting and stardom and everything else. There's something really special about MSG. And like I said, I'm sure he watched his dad many a time doing that. And it's just been fun to watch what, as I said, him and Tim Stützle, and since they've been with Giroux, has been one of the better lines in the National Hockey League.
One of the great pieces of video from after the fight was for some reason, it sort of ISO'd on Claude Giroux as he's standing on the bench watching the fight, and it's almost like he's ducking and weaving as the two of them, which was pretty good. And then there was the rest of the players who we didn't see, but here is Jake Sanderson, of course, playing his first game at the world's most famous rink. So there's all that aspect of it, and then, of course, the work of his captain.
All the boys are super proud of him. He stepped up. I'm never going to forget that fight, just, you know, center ice at MSG, and then he stares down our bench, and that got us all fired up for sure, but, you know, kudos to him. He played a great game, and, you know, he deserved to score that goal at the end.
There is Sens rookie defenseman Jake Sanderson talking about the night of Brady Tkachuk.
Yeah, and it's funny when you look at the National Hockey League, JR, because I do a bit of me with MSG, haven't been many times. I don't know if it necessarily lives up to the overall atmosphere, but on a night when it is going, when you do walk into the building and there's a famous walk up the ramp and everything else, for a lot of players, and I do think in the case of Sanderson and Tkachuk, although technically Canadian/American in Sanderson's case, it's a really special place. Like, it is the world's most famous arena. It is the Rangers. And, yeah, there's something very special for players like a Jake Sanderson, anybody for that matter, can only imagine for Timmy Stutzla. You know, first time you step in there, it's a nice moment to be in the city and to play against the New York Rangers.
So, Sens have now won 4 of 5. Had an unbelievable comeback and win on Friday night, that Tkachuk game, and then followed it up with another win on Saturday, because I think if they had followed it up on Saturday and lost to, you know, a pretty well-rested San Jose team, they had not played since Wednesday.
Yeah.
Sens had played the night before. Now, it's not a long flight back, and they got back in reasonable time, so but it was their first back-to-back all year. If they followed it up on Saturday and had a snoozer and kind of lost, then I think Friday's impact is lost. Now that the fact that they won both games on the weekend, they've won 4 of 5. Do you feel like overall that they have turned the corner, or is it still wait and see for you?
No, I think they've turned the corner, JR. What had me kind of, you know, thinking about Sunday was, unfortunately, the depth up front and on defense wasn't addressed over the summertime, and it was in players leaving and who didn't come in. In the simple fact of, I think they've turned the corner. The big boys are firing in all cylinders for the most part. Still want a little more out of DeBrincat and Batherson, but they were better on Saturday. The power play itself was incredible. They've gotten some goaltending. So now I think it's a reasonable goal or a possibility they can get back to 500. But as far as realistically, and I guess if Norris came back a bit different, but when I look at the overall depth and you address this, you know, if that second line isn't going for you, it is all about the first line. Like, you right now have a third and fourth line that unfortunately aren't going to contribute a whole lot offensively. Defensively, still a lot of work. But you've got a couple of goaltenders right now that I think you can ride a bit along with a power play. So if turning the corner is getting back to 500, JR, I think it's possible. Mm-hmm. But as far as going next level and attaining a playoff spot, I guess I look at it and say, when these players have all of a sudden hit their stride and you're young players, it's a bit of a shame that there isn't a little more depth on the back end and up front, because I do believe at that point that would have been a playoff team. And who know? And I don't say this get in and go, but I look back to L.A. the year they made the Jeff Carter trade. It's like, wow, all of a sudden, boom, things happen. They won a cup. And I just look at that and say, man, Stutzla and Tkachuk are going next level. Shabbat has returned and looking great. Sanderson is playing like a veteran defenseman. But unfortunately, as you get into a busy stretch here, there's just not enough depth, unfortunately.
We have spent so much time talking about, you know, the bottom end of the defense, you know, that it's a well-worn topic, to
yeah,
be sure, and
sure,
will
yeah.
remain
yeah.
so until if and when they address it. We haven't spent as much time talking about, you know, relatively speaking, the lack of depth up front. And part, it's been due to the fact that on nights like the weekend, we saw the frontline guys step up. Brady Tkachuk's effort on Friday and then into Saturday as well. 3 power play goals when you've got, you know, all your top forwards out and your top 1 or 2 defensemen are out there. So when they're out there, no issues whatsoever. The Ottawa Senators are fighting on all cylinders. Mm-hmm. But as you mentioned, the lack of depth up front. I did the math on the weekend about
what
kind of offensive contribution they're getting from their bottom 6 right now. And if we include all 6 players that played on the weekend, so that was Gambrell was in for Brassard, but Brassard really doesn't have much offensive numbers to speak of as well. But if you look at Gambrell, Mott, Joseph, and then the fourth line of Kostelec, Kelly, and Watson, in total, those 6 players who played 123 games, they have 8 goals and 24 points in total. So if you were to prorate that over an entire 82-game season, you're looking at about 30 goals and 52 assists. So about you're essentially getting about a goal every 3 games from your bottom 6.
Yeah.
Right now. That's the way the math is working. And that's just, it's not, you know, listen, it's great having the types of, you know, the Stutzlas and the Tkachuks and Giroux's having a great year. And you know, DeBrincat and Batherson, DeBrincat's getting better. What, you know, that top 6, you know, They're going to carry a lot of nights, but they're not going to be able to carry you every night. You have to get some contributions from the bottom end of your forwards, and the Sens are not getting anything from any of their bottom 6.
Yeah.
And so it's not sustainable over the long term if you don't get more offensive contributions from your, you know, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12
forwards. Yeah, no, and they're fun discussions here, and I'll take a step further, is that I still, and again, a little bit better, but when you look at DeBrincat, Pinto, and Batherson, they have to be better. You look at allocation of salary, especially in Batherson and DeBrincat, they have to be better. And then it is a domino effect, but this is a little bit of the creation of the discussion in the summertime. There's no doubt that if you take out a player like Norris, that hurts a team. A lot of teams are injuries. But that domino effect right there, along with the Paul for Joseph has not worked out, and the versatility of Paul to start. But even if you did that, that's fine. If you had Norris healthy, Pinto slides down, you have Joseph, but then we go back to the perplexing move of Connor Brown. So all of these things, along with Formanton's circumstance, all of a sudden put you in a spot, let's be honest, between Mott and Gambrell, probably fourth line players. Mott in the right spot.
That's a good penalty killer.
Yeah, 3-4. You know, Sparker Kelly is probably a depth player that, you know, you could dig.
He has one assist in 23
You
games.
Can plug anybody like that in the league. The coach likes Watson. He's okay. Kostelic's a fourth line center. Joseph with a Pinto, and I think a better player like Connor Brown would be an effective line. But unfortunately, if you go back to it, and injuries happen. But I do look at some of the moves in the summertime, along with not addressing the defense, and I just say what could have maybe been. Mm. And I don't mean it as a big thing, but I just say, hey, yeah, you had a big summer, and it's great. But if you took it a step further, it makes you wonder, as good as your young players are now playing, the way Sanderson has stepped in, Shabbat's back, when Zub is healthy, JR, with his goaltending tandem, I think very much you could have chased down a playoff spot.
But here we are. So, you know, as much as we continue to keep our eye and see if and when the Sens do anything to address the defense, I kind of look at it as well. And, you know, easy to make trades on the radio. Understand all of that. But I think a somewhat overlooked part of this entire equation is has been the fact that they're not getting anything out of their bottom six right now offensively. No. And I wonder if that, I'm not saying it's priority one, but whether that is something they're going to potentially address as well. Is adding someone who has got a little bit of ability to put the puck in the net, or at least help teammates put the puck in the net, and by extension, one of the guys that's getting ice time right now maybe isn't so, who's not contributing.
And, you know, again, not knowing, now it's kind of a funny thing, because you say, okay, if you're going to make a trade, it's probably a rental. Would you do that right now? I would if you're not giving up anything crazy, but we had talked about a month ago, Jared, when we brought up Sean Monahan. I think it's very realistic if you're trying to address something without, you know, selling the farm, would be finding somebody to play with DeBrinkert and Batherson, slide Pinto back down. But the other part, and I didn't want to rain on everyone's parade over the weekend, you're not far away from, and I'm not saying Watson, but in the case of Mott, Zub, and Talbot, you're actually going to turn the page in the new year and actually start looking realistically that you should be trading those players. You know, they will all bring back something decent. Not Mott as much, but in the case of Zub and Talbot, I think you can do okay for yourself. Try to get your head around on that as we're talking about adding. Well, don't be playing these games about guys you're not going to re-sign and we've got enough draft picks and prospects. Well, there's nobody to call up in Belleville right now. I know that's injury, but you can never have enough, I guess is my point.
All right, thoughts on anything we chat about? Always welcome. You can text us at 12-1200, tweet at us at TSN1200. Sens coming off two straight wins. Try to make it three in a row. The LA Kings are in town for a visit tomorrow night before they hit the road for games in Dallas Thursday and Nashville on Saturday. Dave Poulin will give us his thoughts when he joins us after 8. You're listening to Sports Radio TSN 1200. Welcome back, 7:45 on this Monday morning. J.R. Simmer and Hammer with you. Dave Poulin is coming up after 8 o'clock, and then after 9, Duke Ellingson will talk some NFL with us. Let's get some texts at 12-1200. J.P. writes, to whoever said that Brady wasn't the right guy to be the captain when he first got the C, y'all still want to have that discussion? That's from J.P. Was there anyone that says that he wasn't the right choice?
You know what? There were, I would say, outside the market, people said he's undisciplined. But again, I also think in this case, they had two great choices. But to me, it was always obvious who is the true leader of the club. It is Brady Tkachuk, and everybody else can fall behind. So, yeah, I think very few are. People that don't know, don't know.
Yeah, the other that was, I think, in the discussion was Thomas Chabot at the time. And I will say, as much as I think he's had his trials and tribulations through the early part of the season, especially without the puck in his own zone, I thought since he's come back from his injury, he's played a little bit better. And certainly he's got another power play goal. He's got three power play goals now. This year, he had three in his career before this season. So.
Yeah, well, nice to see the one Joseph served over to him ended up going in, Jared. And I think he's been a whole lot better. And on Wednesday and Friday, he played a combined 60 minutes. To then come in with Zub without, I think he's been outstanding. And I'll also say this. I do think for the start they got off to, that this would have been a burden on Thomas Chabot's game if he was the captain. That's why, to me, Brady Tkachuk is the unicorn and such a great choice for it. And one other shout-out. after taking a puck in the throat, and we talk about the penalty kill of Mr. Hamonic, sitting in, you know, looking down the barrel of slap shots on a penalty kill after getting hit in the throat, JR, is not a whole lot of fun. That was a very gutsy effort by him on Saturday night.
It was, yeah, for the reason that, as you said, he got hit in the throat on Friday night. But then just to, were they out there for the entire 2 minutes? He and Sanderson and Mott are, well, it's pretty darn close. And he broke his stick right off the faceoff, did Hamonic. And he didn't get a stick until DeBrincat came back on the ice and finally gave it to him. Because, well, I'm not sure. If you're Travis Hamonic, would you, even though Tyler Mott's a left shot and you're a right shot, would you still rather just have a stick?
Absolutely.
In your hand, even if it's the wrong, it shoots the wrong way?
Yeah, somebody commented on that. Listen, all I'm there is trying to get the stick, which, well, I don't care if it's straight blade, into the shooting area. Now, is it a little uncomfortable if all of a sudden you corral the puck? Well, you're probably not going to do that. And one other little critique I thought a little bit funny that kind of came to mind on that was when Drew came out to take the face off and won it, and they clear it down, and Mott comes on the ice. We had all that talk about at the Tampa Bay game. But no, you just want anything in your hand because it's kind of your guide, right? Because your first thought, and a goaltender's different, but as a player, JR, your first thought is to always hit the ice if you don't have a stick, right? Like, and that's where you generally lose your composure. So, yeah, you take any stick for that matter.
Yeah, and you know, I just, it's exhausting it's exhausting at any time you're defending, but particularly on the penalty kill, because there's the constant threat of shots, and so you're always kind of, when you don't have a stick, you lose that area, that leverage along the ice, right? So you're kind of going down and getting up, and as you said, at one point, the puck sort of spat free to his right, and he dove over, talking about Hamonic, and he dove over, and I don't think a shot ended up happening, but certainly there was the threat of that. So, yeah, for you know, for as much as he's been criticized overall in his time, I actually, and I know you've been more critical than I have about Hamonic, I thought, relatively speaking, I think he's a third pairing. He's playing second pairing. What I do think, though, is I think he's been a good mentor for Sanderson.
Yeah.
Would you like a better player? Absolutely. But I think it's just in terms of a veteran NHL defenseman. Yeah. I think for a lot of reasons, I think Hamonic's a really just a good guy.
Oh, right? And I agree.
And I think from that perspective, I think he has been very good for Sanderson.
No, I agree. And some of the things, JR, as you make the points, they become magnified. Like Joseph, to me, you know, not bad. He can do some pretty good things. But in reference to the contract he got and the Paul trade, it makes you kind of hammer home the point. And last year, the Hamonic thing was so bizarre in the timing of doing it, with the season basically lost in a signing bonus in the summer. It didn't solve the problem, you know, and there's a lot of defensemen that have since moved. But as far as a pro and everything else, yeah, absolutely. And now on the 4-on-3 as well, you're not moving. You've played 3 games in 4 nights. You have a good group along with Erik Karlsson to move the puck around, JR. It's exhausting. And that's where when you watch Forsberg, he was actually going lateral and elevating. Like he played it so athletically and played it so hard. That was what made it fun to watch. And I also wanted to ask you thoughts after watching, I guess, a little bit more. What do you think of Erik Karlsson's game?
I didn't notice him as much on Saturday, but I wasn't really looking for him. Is that a fair way to assess that?
I just had a main focus on him.
I didn't have a thought. You were at the game. So.
Yeah, it was just live because I just wanted to watch it. And you just, man, the guy's hockey sense and the way he can throw the puck around is so special. But I'm just very curious if somebody trades for him, JR. Like the opening play, you know, he kind of got roaded into the boards, and there's a couple of times there. It's not the same player, and he does so many good things, but I'm just curious if he goes to another team. I don't like his gap control, and he's not the biggest guy in the world. He's not the same player, unfortunately, from 5 years ago. Is he playing some real good hockey? Absolutely. But I guess I'm in summary, if I was a contending team, I wouldn't be trading for Erik Karlsson.
Well, yeah, if he didn't have 4 more years left on his deal,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Oh, if he was a rental? Yeah, maybe.
I don't think there's much doubt that you'd, especially if you needed somebody with some offense or on the power play or whatever.
Exactly.
I mean, he puts puts you over the top type of trade.
Yeah.
But with that much time. Now, we'll see. There's been some talk of San Jose retaining money and involving a third team. And if they retain money, then you're talking about maybe only having to pay a quarter of his $11.5 million. Does that make it more palatable? But then you're talking about also giving up, you know, potentially, and I guess the bigger question is, you know, with the way he's playing, which is certainly increasing his, I think it's increased his value from where it was a year ago.
Yeah.
Is San Jose in a position now, with still 4 years left on his contract, where they're saying, you know, we'll retain some money, but we need significant assets, or is it still the point of we'll retain some money because, you know, we're not contending, and we want to get that salary off the books, or most of it if we can.
Yeah.
I don't know what his value is.
Here's what Sean Simpson, Ottawa, Canada has. I don't have an answer because I said the same thing Saturday night, JR. You've gone from starting the season as Mike Greer, the general manager of, if we could ever dump this contract, to now you've changed out the used car lot to kind of not Maseratis, but you got a pretty nice car here. Like, what are we going to do? But how it breaks down and what you're able to get. Now, is it a first and a prospect, pick up money? But the other part from San Jose, I will also say, Jaron, this is a little bit like Jake Chychrun. I wouldn't overplay my hand here. If there's a deal to be made between now and the deadline for Erik Karlsson, I'd make it. Because then the other part you run into, Erik Karlsson holds all the cards. And I've lived this with the Toronto Maple Leafs. Where does he see himself wanting to go? And that's the other part. What always happens in these situations, it's usually narrowed down to by one team that the player says he's willing to go to. And when the one team gets the phone call, knowing that's the only place he could go, it's hard to make a deal. So, yeah, it'll be real neat for a young manager like Mike Greer to see how he handles this.
All right, this text comes in and says, reports from the weekend, including Elliot Friedman from Hockey Night in Canada Saturday, suggest that Brock Besser is apparently is through his agent. They're looking at potentially shopping himself around to see if there's a trade to be made. So Vancouver is essentially saying we're open to trading Brock Besser. Someone writes and says, would Brock Besser be a fit for the Sens?
Well,
any thoughts?
Well, no, we addressed it on the weekend, JR. Like, I'm not a huge fan of Brock Besser. I mean that in relation to the top six forwards Ottawa has right now, and if you include Norris, even Pinto, for where you're at, I don't know if he's a fit. Now, I don't know contractually. I was just pulling that up, JR. That's why there's a bit of a hesitation.
$6.65 million for two more years after this
Okay.
one.
Would you be, and this would be the only thing, I don't think it would ever involve DeBrincat, would you trade Brock Besser for Drake Batherson? As it sits right now, I probably wouldn't. But those are the types. My point being, if that's the deal you're going to make, that's not solving Ottawa's problem. That's if you wanted to flip something out. What they need right now is a center that can play between Batherson and DeBrincat, and maybe that ends up being where they wait on Norris to come back. But so I would say no. I'm nervous about the concussions in the past. He's not a super hard player, but I know he's a good player.
Yeah.
And he's also gone through, it looks like, a pretty tough time with the passing of his father. What is very weird, though, you don't often see a manager, JR, allow an agent to call around on a quality player like that.
Mm-hmm.
That's usually some guy that's sitting in the press box is like, hey, why don't you call around and see if somebody can make a trade? Like, or you're trying to humble the agent that there's not a lot of people interested in him.
Yeah. Everything out of Vancouver is bizarro this year for a lot of different reasons. If it's a Brock Besser or Drake Batherson and whatever else, might no chance. Even though Drake Batherson hasn't played great hockey this year, I still think that, you know, he's at least, in my opinion, the equal, if not a better player, and he's on a better contract, and it's a longer-term contract.
Yeah, great points,
I'm keeping Batherson all day. And the other thing Besser's sitting on 4 goals in 18 games. He's come off some injuries, as you said. He's had a real tough time dealing with the passing of his father, and, I don't begrudge anybody that. If I'm the Ottawa Senators, I don't need another highly paid winger. Okay, I got to make a decision on, I guess if you're talking about swapping one out and bringing him in, still, in my opinion, not the right move to make.
Yeah,
so I don't see a fit at all.
No, I agree. And now, again, the way teams that approach it, when I look at a trade like this, JR, is almost more of that one for one. And you're trying to bet on the fact of him getting a fresh start out of Vancouver, that'll be a good player for you. And it kind of takes me back to when there was no salary cap. We saw a lot more of these trades, right? Guys that get 5, 6, 7 years into their career. Managers call each other up, say, man, you know, probably a pretty good time here to make a little one-for-one and switch things up. But in today's salary cap, and I agree, that's not what the Ottawa Senators are needing right now.
This text comes in, said, fellas, I was at the game at MSG on Friday, and I turned to the guy beside me when the Sens pulled Talbot, and I said, the Sens have given up an empty net goal. Hang on. I had that all
every time they
aside.
Pulled the goal.
Yeah,
banner?
Basically. Yeah. And he goes, not this time. So he was giving himself a JR pat on the back for predicting the Tkachuk. And by the way, great tip by Tkachuk. Got to give kudos to Shabbat. That was an unbelievable keeping at the blue line, because that looked like he knocked it out of the air and then knocked it off the blue line and then shot it very quickly. And I think the whole thing took Shesterkin, maybe with the tip by Tkachuk. Yeah. Took him by surprise. So got to give a little shout out to Shabbat for a real nice play at the blue line. Well.
Absolutely. And that fellow would say, not on my watch. And also when you see these, and now I'm having visions of great Ranger defensemen of the past and Zubov and Leach and keeping pucks in, especially Zubov. There was a play on Saturday night, guys, where Jake Sanderson, a left shot, was on the right side. I don't know if you remember this, right in front of the Sens bench, he was able to somehow, which if you understand how uncomfortable this is as a left shot, he was somehow able to go to the boards with his hand and keep the puck in. And these little things that these great athletes are able to do with that special hand-eye coordination, that little subtle play right there. Not to mention early in the game, I can't remember who he chased down in San Jose. It was a two-on-one situation. He just cut right over the guy and, you know, completely cut him off. Or maybe that was even the Ranger game. A lot of special things happening.
Absolutely. All right, so a pair of wins. Everybody's feeling a little bit better about the Sens after the two victories on the weekend. We'll see what the LA Kings bring coming up tomorrow night. Sens back on the practice ice later this morning. All right, 7:58. Let's quickly touch on the World Cup from the weekend, especially from yesterday, because this guy is doing special things.
We're about to find out how much added on time there will be from the fourth official down below. 5 minutes, here is Mbappe. Mbappe! Oh, what a special goal! That is a stunning strike from Kylian Mbappe. Right-footed, arrows its way into the top right-hand corner. And the defending champions are easing their way into the last eight.
There you go. There is the third goal, his second of the match, fifth of this World Cup for Kylian Mbappe, who is, we'll remind everybody, 23 years old and is already pacing to perhaps be the greatest goal scorer in the history of the World Cup. And he's got the French into the quarterfinals, taking on England. I find it hard to believe that two of the, you know, great soccer-playing nations in history have never met in the knockout stages of the World Cup before, but that is the case. Yeah. So everybody's looking forward to Saturday's match between France and England.
Yeah, and not a bad time for local businesses, JR, even here. I can only imagine the excitement and the hype and amount of people that'll be out watching this. Yeah, this is, be one for the ages. Hopefully lives up to the billing.
I threw it out there yesterday that, you know, and Connor McDavid is kind of like, it's sort of the same thing. When you're already playing in the greatest league in the world, in this case the NHL with Connor McDavid, mm-hmm. or in the case of soccer, the World Cup, it's the greatest players in the world collectively, and then you are better than anybody else. That really is something. Yeah. And Mbappe is like when he's on the field, he's better than anybody else on any other team.
Yeah,
and that is spectacular.
It really is, and even I don't know if you could compare the sports chair, and I always just go back to watching anything. Tell me who the best athletes are. Well, they find their way. But it just feels like in soccer, for the most part, I have the ability to defend the best player a little better than I do in hockey. Like, there is nothing you can do with Connor McDavid. You mentioned 3-on-3. When him and Dreisaitl are out, well, there's nothing I can do other than hold you. In the case of soccer, you've got almost everybody back in the box. And in tight areas, he's able to score goals that are just... Oh, it's just a treat to watch. And if you watch the overhead cam on that one goal he scored, I think left to right... The velocity on the ball is scary, hey? How much he gets on it. Just, as you said, just a treat to watch.
Now, when I threw it out yesterday, somebody said, yeah, but all his teammates at PSG, Paris Saint-Germain, they all hate him. Yeah. So what? They're happy when they
puts
the old ball
jealousy
in the...
Jealousy is a tough thing in the world, hey?
Absolutely. Oh, you want us a World Cup? You're my best friend.
Yeah.
All right, 8 o'clock. This text comes in and says, can we please get a how about them Cowboys? I like it when Cowboy fan is like feeling it, but just like they're smelling themselves right now. Cowboy Nation is out there. They took care of the Indianapolis Colts with a big fourth quarter last night, 54-19. Absolutely.
Yeah, the Colts stink.
You want the Cowboys just like the Leafs. It's no fun if they don't make it. And even better, you want the Cowboys with hype going into the playoffs, JR, and a home game.
Exactly.
There's nothing more, as you say, delicious than watching them fail.
This is what JR is doing, is allowing Cowboy fans to get full of themselves.
Smelling
even
themselves.
More.
Yeah. Allowing them to smell themselves.
I don't like that. So then the fall is that much greater.
Huh? There's method to my madness. All right, just look up in the standings. 8:01, we'll take a break. Top of the hour news and sports update is upcoming. And then Dave Poulin's thoughts on the NHL weekend that was, including the wins by the Sens. Look ahead to the next week, including a visit by the Kings tomorrow. Dave Poulin joins us next right here on Sports Radio, TSN 1200.